I wonder what you thought when Colin was reading those words, particularly the first few words. If anyone comes to me, says Jesus, and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yet even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. It's very nice that Adam and Amy are here. Well, Amy's outside in one of the groups, but Adam's here. And it's good that they're back after their wedding. And I was preaching at their wedding last week, which was a great privilege. I preached from Joshua, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. But having looked at this text this morning, I thought rather cheekily, I wonder if I could preach this text at their wedding. I wonder if I should have preached this text at their wedding. Whoever does not hate his husband or wife cannot be my disciple. And then just left it at that. Said, go for the reception, go figure. What does that mean? I wonder if you're a little bit confused or repulsed or uncomfortable about what exactly Jesus is saying. Do we need to hate people, especially our own family? Or as it goes on, is it expensive? Is it like every Christian has to die? Or you're not like a proper Christian if you don't die because of your faith? And what's this salt thing going on? What about saltiness? Why does he even mention saltiness? Like, yeah, of course we know that salt is no good if it's not salty anymore, but what has that got to do with anything? And I want to just work through it this morning. I think you'll find it's pretty straightforward, actually, understanding what Jesus has to say. But my challenge in trying to communicate it, but more importantly in trying to live it, is that it is so hard and challenging what he actually says. Once you understand what he says, I don't think it'll take you very long to figure out what he's saying. What it will take you, though, is a lifetime to figure out what you need to do because of what he's saying. Because it's a lifetime experience. It's not like a one-off decision that you've got to make. It's a lifetime experience following the words of Jesus and something that needs to be sustained every day, like salt, not losing its saltiness. When you understand these words, you think, I've got to live these words, and I've not just got to live them today, I've got to live them tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day. And it's always going to be a challenge, and it's always going to be costly. So let's have a look at them together. First of all, Jesus talks about a new priority. To follow him, verses 25 and 26, those most challenging of words in those first couple of verses, is large crowds following him. If anyone does not come to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yet even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. Jesus turns to the large crowds that are following him. He's not particularly talking at his disciples now, so he's talking to the big crowds. There's a big mob that are following after him. Some of them were curious. Some of them were wanting to be entertained. Some of them were wanting to benefit from Jesus as he healed them. So that's the context, the big crowds, not just those who are already sort of given up their lives and are following him. It's the big crowd that he's talking to. And of course, he's talking to the big crowd about commitment, because the likelihood is they're not that committed. And we know that's true, because later on, it's the large crowds who are willing to crucify him, or at least go along with the leaders who want to crucify him. And so it's to those large crowds, he says, if you don't hate, and so forth, even your own life. Now, before we go any further, let's just deal with this word hate, which is probably the difficult word here for us, just looking at the translation in English. The word hate, or the word that's in the Greek that the Bible was, this New Testament was originally written in. The word hate can mean hate, as in that strong dislike, but it can also mean to love less, to love less. And if you take these words in the context of who they're being said to, but also in the context of the rest of the Bible and the rest of Jesus' teaching and the rest of the apostles' teaching about, you know, love within families, husbands loving their wives and so forth, he clearly can't be using the first of those meanings, that you need to hate, you know, as in dislike, wish evil upon husband, wife, family and so forth. He must be using it in the other sense, which the word is sometimes used, which is to love less. So then you substitute that and you say, Jesus is saying you need to love less, family and so forth, and even your own life. Even your own life. He's not saying we should ignore family ties. He's not saying we should despise our family or despise ourselves. But still, what he's saying is remarkably challenging, because what he's saying is this. And you've got to think, is that fair? Because Jesus is saying this: I must be number one in your life, or you're not really following me. I must be number one in your life, or you're not really following me. You're not really serious about being a disciple. Jesus isn't saying we need to dishonor our family. He's not saying we're going to dishonor our parents. Remember, Jesus teaches elsewhere that anyone who says, I'm not going to honor my parents because of some religious duty, he says they're hypocrites. So he's not teaching that. But what he is saying is still really cutting into our hearts and our lives, to say, if I'm not first in your life, I'm really not anyone in your life. If you want to follow me, says Jesus, if you're really serious about following me, you have to put all those other ties, including your love of yourself, into second place. You can't be half-hearted about following me. You can't say, I will follow Jesus as a kind of a menu of things that I like to do. I like to love my family. I like to do my work. I like to look after myself. And I want to follow Jesus too. And that's a group of things that I like to do. And I'll kind of put them in some kind of hierarchy. I'll probably put myself first and my family then. And then the following Jesus bit will come after that. Well, I've organized all those things, sorted my life out, sorted my family out, maybe done a few hobbies. Then Jesus can come there, number four. And Jesus says, no, that's not being a disciple. That's being a hobbyist. He says, if you want to be a disciple, you've got to go number one. Sort all that out. Get me up in number one. Put me in first place. And for everyone who hears those words, that they're really challenging. Jesus is saying, following me is not about entertainment. It's about commitment. It's about heart commitment. Now, of course, as you follow Jesus, you do lots of other things as a consequence of that. You love your family. You love your children. You love your parents. You honor your parents. You work hard for the glory of God, as we were thinking about in our series of just a little while ago. And you rest and take leisure time for the glory of God and have many things to do. But always, always prioritizing on following Jesus. And some of that might affect our family relationships. Some of that following Jesus, putting Jesus first, might affect our family relationships. If you just think very simply, if you're in a Jewish culture then listening to Jesus, or you're in the Greek-Roman culture that the apostles would end up preaching the gospel to, just think really practically. You become a Christian in your family, you're the only Christian in your family, suddenly you're having to make all kinds of priority choices. If I'm a Jew, do I still go and attend the temple worship? Well, no, because that's been superseded by Jesus. I may go and I may make sacrifices because we're in a kind of transition period. But eventually, I will be wanting to recognize the sacrifice of Jesus. I will be going against the religious teachers of my family, because I'll be saying that Jesus is the Son of God and he died and he rose again. And this is going to be difficult for me and my family. More so in the Greek-Roman culture. I'm the only Christian in my family. I become a Christian. My family are still going to the shrines. They're still making sacrifices. They're still thinking the Roman Emperor is a god. They're still worshipping the dead spirits of people who've lived previously. And I'm at odds with them. I don't go with them anymore. I don't want to eat necessarily the same food as they're eating. I don't want to go to the same places. I don't want to have the same practices. I don't want to have the same rituals as they are. And this is difficult for me, putting Jesus first. And I have to think, Jesus is more important than my family loving me. Now, most of us are not having to make those choices. We're not in those kind of cultures that are so sort of take over everything. But for those of us who become Christians and the rest of our family are not Christians, there still is a challenge and a cost, isn't there? We start devoting our emotional energy and time to worshiping God and to learning about Him and to ordering our lives so we can do that. And that's difficult. That can be difficult in marriages. It can be difficult in the wider family. Sometimes other people in the family feel some rejection, some competition. And there's a cost to that. And Jesus says, if you're serious about me, you'll know that. You'll weigh that. But you'll want to put me first. You'll want to put me first because I deserve it. Because I am God. Because I am Savior. Because I am King. Because I am supreme in the universe. You'll want to put me first because of that. But also, you'll want to put me first because it's only by putting me first that you will actually live a good life. It's only by putting me first that you will actually know what to do in your family or in your work or with your hobbies. But you need to put me first. You need to consciously put me first. So it may affect family relationships, but it's much more about who comes first more generally in your life. As I said, there are many good things that we might want to do in our life. Many things that we're called to do as a husband or a father or a mother or a worker or a child or a citizen. There are times that God gives us to enjoy the things that He's made, to discover things, to invent things, to just rest. So Jesus isn't saying stop doing all those, but what He's saying is, what's your priority? Because that priority will shape how you do all those other things. But if those other things are your priority, that will shape how you do Jesus. If you're number one, that will determine what you do with Jesus. If your family are number one, that will determine what you do with Jesus. When the choice comes, what the family want, what you want for the family, will be more important than what Jesus wants for you. Now, bear in mind, I haven't said once yet the church comes first. Jesus doesn't talk about the church as an organization here coming first, does he? He doesn't say if attending a church meeting or serving in the church is not the most important thing in your life, then you can't be my disciple. He's not saying that. But here's the thing, though. There's somehow a connection between those two things, isn't there? And we've got to figure out, what does my priority for Jesus mean in how I want to be with God's people, the church, how I want to grow as a Christian, and how I want to serve as a Christian? That priority for Jesus says, I want in some way to make sure I'm gathering with God's people because Jesus wants me to. I want in some way to make sure that I'm learning from the Bible, that I'm doing that together with God's people, that I'm doing that personally. Somebody was just mentioning in passing the other day that they were with a group of Christians from this church, and quite a few of them don't ever read the Bible if they're not at a church service. You can pay me thousands of pounds and I won't tell you who and where and what the context was. But here's something that is grievous, really. And however busy your life are, however your family ties tie you down, however important your work is, however many hobbies and meetings you've got to go to and things you want to follow and things you want to watch and things you want to do, and even however much you're serving in the church, if you're not regularly, not legalistically like every day or you're going to get struck by lightning, but if you're not regularly looking at the Bible and praying most days, what does that say about your priority for Jesus? It says something else is more important. You're making those value judgments. You've got to be. And let's be brutally honest, I make those value judgments someday. Don't think that I'm always perfect, like I always get up early enough and read the Bible and do stuff. Sometimes it's kind of church stuff, so I can kind of excuse it, but sometimes I don't read the Bible like what I should, like I should. I don't learn English like what I should either, or speak it. But sometimes I don't do that too. This is not like, you know, let's have a go at you because I'm perfect. But Christ is saying to me and saying to you, you're making choices about what's important to you. Your work is more important to you. Your family is more important to you. Getting out to do that thing is more important to you. So you didn't read the Bible today. And maybe on that day, you're not really saying, I don't love Jesus. You're just saying, this is just inevitable. I've got a plane to catch. I've got a train to catch. I've got something to do. I can't stop. You know, I didn't get up early. It may be that. But a lot of days, we just make a choice, don't we? We just make a choice. Something else is more important. And Jesus is saying, if you really want to follow me, you've got to make some better choices. And that's just a small thing. And I didn't have that in my notes. But there's loads of other things that God is calling us to say, are you putting my son Jesus first? Reading the Bible is one thing. But there are many other areas. Attending with God's people is a thing. Serving in the church is a thing. But it's not the thing. It's the whole of how you shape your life and what your priorities are and how you decide on what your priorities are and how you live all those priorities and how you play the games you play and how you interact in your family. It's all flowing out of a priority for Jesus. So do you want to be a disciple of Christ? Then make sure you put him first. Second, Jesus says, and really all these things hang together, they're kind of building of the same thing. Jesus says, be prepared then to give up your life sacrificially. If you want to put me as number one, it's going to cost you. That's what he's saying. If you want to put me as number one, it's going to cost you. You're going to have to live a life that is sacrificial. See that in verse 27? He says, whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Most of you know this, but just to kind of underline it in case you don't, to say that a person is carrying their cross is to say that they're on their way to be executed. It was the brutal way that Romans would execute people, of course, including Jesus. And part of the humiliation of being crucified is that on the way to being crucified, you would carry the cross, or at least the cross beam, not the whole cross, because the vertical one would be in the ground somewhere, but the cross beam you would carry on your shoulders on the way to be executed, and you know, everyone could ridicule you and so forth on the way, like they did to Jesus. And so what Jesus is saying is a striking, gruesome picture, isn't it? He's saying, be like someone on their way to be executed. Pick up this lump of wood and carry it like you've given up on your life if you want to be my disciple. He says, it's going to cost you. You see, you might start off wanting to be a Christian or being a Christian because it's intellectually appealing, kind of makes sense. It's emotionally satisfying. It's relationally positive for you because you've got friends. And all those are good things about becoming a Christian, good things that may attract you to the Christian message because it does make sense. And it does bring you into a new family. Jesus talks about that elsewhere, about the new brothers and sisters that you have. But Jesus says more than that, that there will be times when it's not seeming to be working very well for you because it costs. And you might be asked to give up something. When you become a Christian, you might have to give up some things. There may be a lifestyle that you're living. There may be a relationship that you're in or a relationship that you want that you have to let go of. It costs you to become a Christian. It's picking up a cross. It's giving up on my life and it's giving over my life. Might be that there is real danger. It might be just the cost of being misunderstood. It might be just the cost of serving. That, yeah, you've put Jesus first and you've made your priority decisions, but it's hard work. it's hard work and you feel quite jaded and tired from it, and you've had to give up on some hobby that you really did want to follow, but you've had to weigh it up and think, I can't really follow Christ properly if I pursue this thing. And so it costs you. And there's lots of ways, in little ways, that it's costing you. And maybe if you've been a Christian a while, you're not realizing. I don't want to say that we're not taking any costs. We are taking costs. Some of them we kind of just take for granted. It's like cost of being here on a hot day, especially if you're up here. And Jesus is really prodding away because we don't like the cost. We're not really prepared to give up very much. And I have this rhetorical question to ask, which is, what have you given up for Christ? You know, and you stick it down in your notes and you think, oh yeah, that's a good question to ask. What have you given up for Christ? You think, yeah, that'll be a good question. And then you think, what have you given up for Christ? Like, what have I given up for Christ? Why have I given up for Christ? Now, Jesus doesn't say everyone's going to die. Think about his disciples. Some of them were martyred. Some of them lived long lives. He doesn't say everybody's got to die. But he does say you've got to consider yourselves as good as dead. You've given up on, in a sense, the claim to life and all that goes with it, not just to stay alive and not be dead, but the claim to rule your life, to determine your life. When you're carrying your cross, you consider yourself good as dead, and you're under the authority of someone else, aren't you, on your way to the execution. And Jesus is not calling us to kind of invent things, to say, well, I'm not sure I'm giving much, so I need to kind of invent something to be painful, then I'll feel better about it. That's some kind of medieval Christianity that involves sort of inflicting pain on ourselves as if somehow that will make us a better Christian. Jesus isn't calling us to that, but it still leaves us with this kind of hanging question to say, considering you've been a Christian quite a while, what has it cost you? And if it hasn't cost you anything, are you really a disciple? Are you a spectator? Are you a hobbyist? If it hasn't cost you anything, I wonder. And that's what Jesus is putting out there for us. Are we prepared to give up our lives sacrificially? God's mathematics is that in that way, we don't lose out, of course, as we'll see in just a moment. But in the moment, we do lose out. James was beheaded. Stephen, who followed the apostles, was stoned. What have we given up for Christ? Third thing, again, it connects. Jesus pushes it even further. He talks about giving up life and then kind of extends it even further and says, talks about giving up our claim on everything. But then he wonderfully says that when we really reflect on it, we realize that it's worth it. See what he says? He starts to give an illustration. So he's made these two very bold statements about putting him first, about considering our lives over, as it were. And then he says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the costs? He says, the Christian life will cost you, I've just told you that, so you need to build that into your estimate now. Don't become a Christian thinking, my life now will be completely rosy. Don't think that when you become a Christian, everything will be fine, you will not suffer pain one more time in your life. You've had a painful life perhaps so far, you've had difficult relationships, a difficult life up to this point, and you think, okay, I believe the gospel, I want to follow Jesus, and now I know that everything in my life is going to be sorted and happy. Jesus is saying, no, you need to realize, because you're going to put me first, it's going to cost you, because it's like carrying the cross, and so you need to weigh that up. You need to weigh that up as you become a Christian. like anyone on any building project. Of course, Jesus is saying, because it kind of works. It works in every culture, in every generation. You've all done it probably for those of you who've got houses and done projects on them. You make an estimate for the cost and you work out whether you can afford it. And then, of course, when you actually do it, it always costs a bit more because you didn't make a very good estimate, or you tried to kid yourself into thinking it was a bit less so you could actually afford it, because you couldn't afford it if it was the amount that it really should be. We've all kind of, well, perhaps I'm the only one who's done that in projects. And Jesus says that's a stupid way to go on. You need to work out how much it's going to cost so you can finish the job. But then he gives another illustration, which is really interesting. He says, suppose a king, verse 31, is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. And I think what Jesus is saying is he's introducing something else here, which I think is really helpful. He's not just saying, yes, you need to estimate the cost. He's done that with the tower illustration, saying, if you want to build a tower and you want to finish it, you make sure you've got enough money to finish it. That's the point about the tower. But then he talks about the battle. And his point is that if you weigh up the cost of the battle and you think, I've got 10,000 men, and if you don't think you're going to win, then you give up. You sue for peace. But then he goes on to say, so you need to give up everything for me. And I think the point of the illustration is this. The reason you go into battle as a Christian, the reason you take the cost, the reason you put Jesus first, is because it's a battle that is winnable. In fact, it's a battle that's won. That's the point. You see, you'd only be willing to give up everything if you knew it was worth it. You see, you're hearing all this stuff about the cost and the cross, and you would be thinking, is it worth the effort? Because I could do all that and take all that pain, and then I'd die and my life's over, and what was the point? I just would have made a few easier choices in life. And Jesus says, be prepared to give up everything to be my disciple. Be prepared to go into battle because it's worth it. And you know, that kind of connects with the cross, doesn't it? Of course, Jesus is just making a general point about the person carrying the cross on their way to execution, considering themselves as good as dead. But it's not just a random example, is it? Because he will carry a cross. Well, get someone else to carry it for him, but he will have a cross that he's carrying to his execution. And he will die, Jesus, and he will rise again. How does that connect? Well, the reason we carry our crosses, the reason we bear the pain and the cost of being a Christian is because we think it's worth it. Because although we give over our lives to Jesus, though we consider ourselves as good as dead, and one day we die to self now, and we will physically die if Jesus doesn't come before that. Like Jesus, and because of Jesus, we will rise again. And so it's worth it. All that cost was worth it. All that effort was worth it. All that strenuous giving up of my time, all that having to have awkward relationships because I'm trying to put Jesus first, all those awkward conversations I had to have because I put Jesus first, all the abuse I received because I put Jesus first, all the perhaps legislation that came down upon me because I put Jesus first, all of that will have been worth it. Every effort will have been worth it because I will rise again and I will be like Jesus and I will be with Jesus, and it will all mean something. And it will not have been a battle lost. It will have been a battle won. So the casualties were worth it. The things I had to give up, the things I had to give over, the effort I had to make, it was all worth it in the end. Jesus talks elsewhere about giving up everything. If we could gain the whole world but lose our soul, it's worthless. But turn that the other way. If we lose the whole world, if we lose everything but but gain our souls, it will have been worth it. And then Jesus ends by saying, this is the authentic, distinctive Christian life. See that in the last couple of verses, 34, 35. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure heap. It is thrown out. Salt was a big commodity. You know, the word for salt in Latin gives us our word for salary, because soldiers used to be paid in salt. It was a big, significant commodity because of its, particularly its preservative powers. It was a valuable thing. And this valuable thing is completely worthless if it doesn't have that preservative flavoring power. And it must be that Jesus is saying that just here, because he's saying, if you don't put me first, if you're not prepared to take the cost of being a Christian, if you haven't weighed that and built that in your calculations that it's worth it, and I'm willing to give up everything because it's worth it, if you're not doing those things, you will not be a distinctive follower of Jesus. And as we're coming to an end, it kind of just leaves us hanging with this question. Do you want to be a bland disciple? Or do you want to be a salty, flavorsome, pungent, distinctive, preserving, improving disciple? None of us would choose to be a bland disciple. You're not hearing that word and saying, yes, that's me. I want to be a bland disciple. None of us want to be that, do we? And Jesus is saying, if you want to be a distinctive, flavorsome, preserving disciple, it's not a casual thing. It's a serious thing. It's a give over your life thing. It's worth it because I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to give you eternal life. It's worth it because as you give over your life to me, you gain everything. And you gain a new family for this life and the next. And you understand how the world works. And you understand how you work. And you receive grace every day and help to help you in every single possible need. And you have a Father in heaven who loves you and cares for you and will preserve your life for as long as he wants you to live. All of those blessings come flooding over you. But it feels some days quite costly. But as you do that, you will be radical disciples. You will be distinctive disciples. You will be a church on the march, changing the world for the better as you speak the gospel and as you live the gospel. And if you speak and live a gospel that costs nothing, then it probably means nothing to you. So Jesus is saying, come on. Don't be like the crowd wandering around wanting to be entertained by Jesus, just wanting a few benefits that the church brings. Be a radical follower of me. Follow me with all your heart and soul and strength, and you will do good in the world. Imagine you go out of here this morning thinking, not I want to be a martyr, but just I want to put Jesus first. And that every consequence that flows from that, you think, it's costing me, but it's worth it. Just think what a remarkable witness that is. And that's what Jesus is calling us to.